Hello, and welcome to Harp Column Podcast, taking you behind the stories in Harp Column from a practical harpist's perspective. My name is Christina Finch, and I will be your guide to all things harp. Today's episode is brought to you by Harp Column Music at harpcolummusic.com, where you can download PDFs of some of the best new arrangements and compositions for solo, ensemble, and chamber harp. Looking for something different that has great audience engagement potential? Check out The Frog Prince and Faithful Henry and The Golden Bird by Allison Wright. These two productions for pedal harp, storyteller, and actors of the classical stories from the Grimm brothers will appeal to all ages and are available now at harpcolummusic.com. Episode 13 brings us back to The Harmonic Curve, a year-long feature article by harpist Jamie Hafner. Jamie was gracious enough to join us once again to talk about her most recent installment of The Harmonic Curve on revisiting old repertoire. To get things started, I'll have Jamie introduce herself.
My name is Jamie Hafner. I live and teach in Denton, Texas at the University of North Texas. I have a duo called Better Than One with Emily Mitchell. I have another chamber duo called Crimson that is violin and harp.
It's always one of my favorite things to bring out an old piece of repertoire that I haven't worked on in years. It's like an old friend. I'm curious about your thought about interpretation. At the conference, I was very fortunate to be able to spend some time with David Cutler. One of the things he was talking about a lot was interpretation. If you're going to play a piece of music that's already been played before, make it your own. Don't just play it the way everybody plays it. Because there's already 50 recordings of the 4 a.m. Impromptu being played the same way on YouTube that anybody can listen to.
Right.
I'm curious how you bring interpretation into your own playing, especially when bringing back old repertoire.
Your question sparked a whole lot of thoughts simultaneously. The first thing, you have to approach old repertoire in a different way from a new piece of music. New music is like a new friend, right? You meet somebody, you're so excited about learning their different parts of their personalities, and oh, we've got this in common, and oh, that's really different. I've never met anybody who did that. With an old piece, it's like an old friend that you haven't seen in many, many, many years that you already know really well. So the relationship between these two is automatically really different. I think if you tried to approach an old piece without a sense of excitement of rekindling that friendship, something would be lost. A lot of what I do is really starting from the theoretical side. As I'm playing through a piece, I really try to make new connections about the notes. A perfect example is Ravel's Introduction to Allegro. Every single time I've brought that piece back, I've discovered something about it that I didn't know before. So for instance, very simply, that little theme, it is actually woven through the entire thing. It's not necessarily played the same way. He only has a couple of melody in that are just transformed. And when you start to listen to it that way, that creates that new relationship. And for me as a performer, that's what gets me excited. That's what gets me to the harp every single day is, oh, let me see if I can bring out that phrase a little bit more. Maybe I can help my audience hear this in a way that they haven't heard it before, even if they've heard this piece 50 times. Being, you know, more on the traditional side, knowing that what we're doing is playing and teaching these same standards all the time, that's the insertion of our creativity into it, is how we put our stamp on it. We're not going to rewrite the notes. We're not going to, you know, dramatically change things. We want to honor the composer. But how can I honor what the composer has written more while being Jamie Hafner as the harpist? That's the real key. Another part of that is in going back to older repertoire, I really like to go and do a little bit of research. So of course, you know, if I've played a piece, I've heard all the standard recordings, but I really enjoy going on YouTube and finding recordings of harpists that I don't know, sometimes really young harpists, sometimes really, you know, much older harpists than me, but finding some recordings of harpists that I like and also those that are really different for me, because it's surprising. The ones that are really different, totally different interpretation, sometimes I learn the most from those. I believe it's really important to expose ourselves to the good recordings, but also those that you might not standardly hear. This is part of the act of keeping old pieces fresh. If it's honoring what's on the page, and if there isn't something specifically written by the composer about, you know, this must be placed or this must be a particular phrase, then put your stamp on it, and it might become the new standard that everybody else does.
Along the lines of creativity, I know personally that I have a hard time being creative behind my instrument. I feel that in most traditional classical training methods, the emphasis is directed away from creativity at the instrument. What practices do you employ in your teaching that help your students tap into their creativity?
So creativity can take so many different forms. I think there's creativity in teaching, there's creativity in performance, there's creativity in composition. Particularly in a university or college setting, it's easy to focus on coloring between the lines and how well can you color between the lines, right? But we forget that in composing, those composers weren't necessarily coloring in between the lines, right? You know, the compositions that stand the test of time had something really unique that made them stand out. And so we as artists have to do that same thing. So how to spawn that creativity, I think, is really different for every single person. But something that I feel is really important in the whole package is that everybody needs to learn how to improvise. And it doesn't have to be standard jazz. But you know, that act of tangible creating can help free you up in order to be more creative in the standards. Whether it's in your warm-ups, transposing keys, or if you're making up your own warm-ups, or if you just come up with a melody, you hear a melody in your head that's random and you sit down and try playing it at the harp. All of these acts of creativity, you know, set up those linkages in your mind so that you're more apt to see the connections in the standard repertoire that you're playing. So that way you can kind of have your cake and eat it too. I think you can, in a way, if you're approaching the piece in a new way, you can color inside the lines, but with totally different colors from what anybody else has used before.
You're listening to Harp Column Podcast, episode number 13. You can read more harp news, feature stories, and subscribe to the print magazine at www.harpcolumn.com. This episode features harpist Jamie Hafner, author of the year-long series The Harmonic Curve. We didn't speak with Jamie for last issue's Harmonic Curve, which focused on warm-ups, so let's get to that now.
I think if people are honest with themselves, most people don't warm up enough. I can speak for myself in that I almost never warm up. So which one of your teachers was the one, or was it all of your teachers, that said, keep your thumbs up, sit straight, and do your warm-ups every day?
You know, it was all of them, for sure. But, you know, I think I heard it more from, of course, my first teacher. So Anna Voorhees, I heard this from her in every single lesson. And in fact, you know, in my lessons with her, we would do warm-ups every single day. And after doing a warm-up for a while, after I'd mastered it, she would give me a new warm-up. Sometimes she wrote warm-ups. She would come up with them on the fly sometimes, which really inspired me as a student that, oh, well, you're not restricted to just what's written on a page. You can come up with something. If you're playing this particular piece, which has a lot of one particular tricky technique, of course, you can make up a warm-up, which will complement your practice that way.
So you said in your article that you use the Renier Method book for your warm-up.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other resources that you use?
I think, like most harpists, I put together a lot of different resources, but I'm always looking for more as well. I happen to love the La Riviere book. And just from, you know, from going through the Renier Method, she certainly has derived a lot from La Riviere as well and made it her own. And so similarly, you know, I've taken some of what Renier has published and made it my own as well. I'm also a big, big, big believer in etudes, and I know that's a slightly different topic, but I think etudes fill the mental hunger for us. And what I mean by that is only part of harp playing is physical. More than half of it is mental, and you have to be able to process notes and recognize them on the page really quickly and process that into the physical so quickly. So this is my feeling. In order to have a really good warm-up, it really needs to fit both sides of that. And so it needs to do a little bit what an A2 does, and it also needs to just get your body moving as well. The other warm-ups that I use are certainly ones that I grew up with, you know, that all of my teachers had used. So I have quite a big resource of warm-ups, and they're all memorized. So that way, you know, if I'm warming up on stage, I can just sit down and play. I don't have to pull out a book and read something.
Wow. And then you also transpose them into different keys, right?
I do. Absolutely. So my favorite ones to transpose are the four finger exercises by Renier. So in her method, she only publishes them. She says to play them in C flat major. And, you know, it goes up through all of the primary chords. So 1, 4, and 5, and occasionally 7. And so those, of course, are the chords that are used throughout our music all the time. So being able to transpose those on the fly, then you'll recognize it more quickly on the music. This is the reason I think it's actually good to not use music when you're doing warm-ups and when you're doing these transpositions. It feeds that mental hunger, which is so critical in warm-ups. The other part about warm-ups, which I've only recently come to understand, is that we as musicians treat warm-ups really different from the way people in sports do. And this is really fascinating to me. I've only learned this by recently working with Saeed Survey, the performance doctor at UNT. He said something pretty shocking to my students, and I mentioned this in the article, which is our bodies were created to go instantly. And this seems to fly in the face of warm-ups, right? The story is that if we waited and stretched and stopped everything and told the saber-toothed tiger to wait there, I've got to stretch before I run away from you, we never would have progressed, right? We never would have survived. So our bodies are actually made to go, but there's a danger in that. If you just sit down and you sit down and you just play the cell zeta variations or play the Glier impromptu, if you just do that, you're not giving your brain a chance to catch up.
Absolutely. And you're also providing your students with a theoretical background. It's interesting because, you know, I've been through so many theory programs, but when I sit down at the harp, my brain does not go to theoretical thinking.
Yeah. What you've described in that, I think, is typical, honestly. And it's not our fault, and it's not the fault of our teachers. I was thinking about this when I was practicing yesterday, that it really is the instrument. It's the fact that we're largely a diatonic instrument. And I say that because, you know, of course we can play chromatically. We know through the ages that we become much more chromatic. But if you're sitting down at a pedal harp and you don't move any pedals, obviously you only have 7 notes, whatever those notes are. Lever harp is actually more chromatic in a lot of ways because you could have a different note in every single scale. But the fact that the harp was developed that way, it logically separates us from what we're playing. We don't have a tactile response the way that a trumpet player knows that the key of D is this combination of keys, or the way that a pianist knows that you play E flat here. For us, of course, E sharp, E flat, E natural, they're all the same, whether you're playing lever harp or pedal harp. And it's that disconnect, I believe, which has caused us to separate ourselves from theory and from thinking about theory. But I would argue that for that reason, theory is that much more important because we use our whole body for it. Whether you're sitting down at a pedal harp and you have to think, okay, I'm going to play a D major scale, I've got to move these 2 pedals down. Or whether you're playing a lever harp and you have to think about that combination of levers in order to change a key, I would argue that it's even more important. We just have to work harder at it. I think the technical challenges of our instrument, statistically, they say the horn and the harp are the 2 most difficult instruments, how hard it is to hit the right note at the right time. I think we tend to get so caught up in that, into just accuracy and technique, which are all very important, but we start to lose the essence of the music. I think if we don't take a step back and think about how is this phrase different from the previous phrase? What did the composer do here that was so different from before? If we don't step back and get that global view, we're missing the forest for the trees.
Jamie, where can people find you out in the world?
You know, the easiest, most direct place to find what I'm doing is really the University of North Texas HARP website. So music.unt.edu/HARP. My students are also part of a HARP ensemble called the UNT Heartbeats. So you can search for UNT Heartbeats on Facebook and Twitter. You can also look for my Crimson Duo on Twitter as well. We also have a website, crimsonduo.com, and any number of those places, you can call me or email me anytime.
That's it for our 13th episode. Many thanks to Jamie Hafner for speaking with us. Music for today's episode comes from Margaret Anasus's new album, Schubert, Complete Impromptus, reviewed by Allison Young in the current issue of Harp Column. To learn more about Harp Column, please visit www.harpcolumn.com and subscribe today to gain access to current and past issues, as well as a lot of great web content. My name is Dr. Christina Finch, and we at Harp Column hope that you have a spectacular week.